The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. Fighting tyranny and government overreach. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
And welcome to the Mark Morano Show, coming at you live on TNT Radio. We have an exciting program today for you. Joining us in about a little later in the program is going to be Robert Zubrin, the author of The Case for Nukes, How We Can Beat Global Warming and Create a Free, Open, and Magnificent Future. And he goes through the whole history of nuclear energy, the demonization, all the structure blockages and protests that have been put in place, and how it fits in our energy mix with fossil fuels, and whether solar and wind are actually, you know, cheaper and more efficient and produce more energy than nuclear. So we're going to go through that whole thing with author Robert Zubrin in about 15, 20 minutes. But first, I've had a loaded week of excitement. I was on Fox and Friends this week. I was on Dan Bongino's Fox News primetime show. And it's just been a busy week. Joe Biden has jumped into the fray of climate once again and saying all sorts of silly, nonsensical things, as only Joe Biden, president, U.S. President Joe Biden can do. And this is actually what I was on Dan Bongino's Fox News show, which this week. And what Biden said was that green policies his green policies, if they are not put forward, that young people, the young generation, will be damned. He condemned kind of like children of the corn or something, you know, kids today, unless we can go full Marxist, unless we can shut down our economy and take away free choice and do planned recessions and regulate every aspect of our lives and ban gas stoves and ban gas-powered cars and have thermostat controls in your house and destroy your dishwashers and your washing machines and stop you from eating meat and get rid of single-family homes and racist roads and make flying a rare treat that you can only afford and only, you know, basically a playground for the rich again. Unless we do all of that and completely restructure our economy and go along, you know, with WHO pandemics and merge COVID and then they're all going to be damned. Now, to me, it would seem as though the climate agenda would be damning, not the other way around, not following that. So what I did at Climate Depot this week is I did a point-by-point rebuttal of Joe Biden's claims on climate change. And I thought I'd have a little fun here. Let me see if I can get I probably won't be able to play the audio, so let's skip that. But I will read you the quotes and then put in some boilerplate, his boilerplate comment and then my responses from my time in the climate debate, from my decades in the climate debate. Joe Biden claimed, quote, Mother Nature let her wrath be seen over the last 2 years. I've traveled on helicopter over more forest area burned to the ground than the entire state of Maryland. Okay, let's stop right there. First off, Joe Biden using the word wrath is invoking as sort of like we're being punished for our carbon sins of emitting carbon dioxide, which is absurd, and which invokes sort of the language of religion. And that's exactly what he said, referencing children will be damned. But what he said about the wildfires was very interesting, because that he actually did take a helicopter over the Caldor fire in California. And that was 200,000 acres burned. But if you noticed, he said he traveled on helicopter over more forest area burned to the ground than the entire state of Maryland. Now, the Caldor fire to which he's referring was 200,000 acres. The state of Maryland is 8 million acres, roughly 40 times larger than what Biden has claimed. I don't know of any reports where Joe Biden actually flew in a helicopter over 7.7 million acres of anything, let alone burning fire. And by the way, and that's one of the key things, wildfires are down 80-90% in the United States since the 1920s. Wildfires have dramatically dropped. wildfires are not even a good measure of climate change in the first place. You are dealing with land use issues, fire suppression, logging, clearing out old growth, invasive species, insect, killing of invasive beetles, other things. There are so many human, political, not in my backyard components of forest fires and wildfires that to say, well, that's because of temperature or humidity or et cetera, or lack of rain, nonsense. And then on the lack of rain front, on hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, wildfires, droughts, particularly droughts, no trend or declining trends. And droughts, global trends are not changing. Now, you can always find a trend. You can say, in the northwest region of California, since 1999, droughts have increased, blah, blah, blah. Oh, my God, if this continues, the state is... And you get all scared. But if you look at California on climate timescales, which is what we're supposed to do with climate change, and also global timescales, but let's just stick with California as a state. The previous centuries had droughts many, many times higher than we're even contemplating today. In fact, the 20th century was sort of the century of, wow, this is much better, you know, weather than we've had previous centuries and more stable. But it doesn't matter because they find one fire somewhere. And of course, it's a record fire in that region as far back as records go. And, you know, who knows how far back records go there in that situation when you're measuring a small area. But this is what Joe Biden's claiming, that this at some kind of, you know, unprecedented weather. And it's just not the case. This is buried in the National Climate Assessment, UN climate reports. The weather is not getting worse. Yes, we are covering the bad weather more and more. We have instant coverage of it, but it just is not the case at all. And this is one of the, I was at the Bali United Nations Climate Summit 2007 when John McCain's top climate guy, we were on a UN bus going out to look at the cocoa bean, I believe, or was some kind of coffee agricultural farms. Pretty sure it was coffee beans, any coffee bean agriculture. And he was telling me that they're going to now start blaming extreme weather events on climate change. And I thought that was an absurd thing, unscientific, and still do. But I didn't realize the genius of the PR strategy, because by hyping every bad weather event, it's a kind of like, see, we predicted it. See, we told you. We knew this was going to happen. We talked about that. So it's just nonsense. So anyway, Joe Biden goes on. It's unscientific nonsense. Joe Biden then goes on to say, if we don't keep the global temperature from going above 1.5°C, then a whole generation is damned. Now, the problem with the damned part on that, and we'll start with that, is we had in a few years ago that New York Times, Tom Friedman actually said on the pages of the New York Times, denying global warming is an almost inconceivable sin. And essentially, you belong I'm going to get the exact phrase. May you be, this is a quote from Tom Friedman, New York Times. Oh, actually, this is Paul Krugman. I always get those two mixed up. New York Times, Paul Krugman on the pages of New York Times. To those who deny global warming, quote, may you be punished in the afterlife for doing so. He called denial, quote, an almost inconceivable sin, unquote. So when you say a whole generation is going to be damned, it's almost as though they're the heathens and they're being, condemned by God. And so this is just silly. But he also said about the 1.5 temperature degree, and this sounds more sciencey, don't you think? Well, in my book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, released in 2018, updated 2019 with a chapter on the Green New Deal, it revealed the goal of a 2-degree limit on global warming has no scientific basis. This was from the ClimateGate emails from the United Nations. And the lead author, Phil Jones, actually said he believes the number of 2 degrees or 1.5 degree, these temperature targets invented by the United Nations, was, quote, pulled out of thin air. And he goes on saying, what's the basis? I don't have the answer. You don't know the answer. I think it is plucked from thin air. And then Hans Joachim Schillenhuber said it's clearly a political goal. Roger Pilkey Jr. called it an arbitrary round number that was politically convenient, so it became a sort of scientific truth. There was, quote, essentially no science behind it, according to climate expert, Dr. Pilkey Jr. So this is what Joe Biden is quoting. You have a bunch of politicians and politicos get together, loosely based on some scary climate models, which don't account for half the variability in nature, and completely, they don't even call them predictions. These climate models are based on emission scenarios. And then the politicians come up with numbers so that they can have a political campaign cause rallying point, 2 degrees. And then they came up with, well, we need to lower that to 1.5 degrees because then we can really put the draconian policies and scare the public. And this is what Joe Biden is claiming. So then Biden says, he talks about the, you know, the wrath Mother Nature let her wrath be seen over 2 years. Now, I've already mentioned some of the extreme weather, but just to be more specific, Joe Biden's talking about the United States, talking about flying over fires. Extreme weather expert, Dr. Roger Pilkey Jr. In a few words, extreme weather in the U.S. has been, well, pretty normal. Some extreme weather phenomena occurred at a rate intensely greater than historical averages, but many occurred less. They have and will be many years with far more extreme weather than we've had in 2020. And I have a quote, another physicist, Dr. Ralph Alexander, that these are the mistaken belief that extreme weather caused by climate change. Actual data reveals, drum roll please, a downward trend. And this is what I just find amazing about this, is that he'll get away with this. By the way, this interview with Joe Biden was on Comedy Central for The Daily Show. And actually a host I'd never heard of was the one who, let's see if I can get his name. I've never heard of this guy. Cal Penn, I think his name is. He's the new comedian host, the replacement of original Jon Stewart. And then I can't remember the other guy's name who replaced him, but he's now off the air. But anyway, it's fitting that this would be on the Comedy Central network. So anyway, Biden goes on and he talks about the helicopter and then hold on, drought. So anyway, so Biden does all that and it becomes in the media as Joe Biden, of course, is the climate president. Everyone's all impressed and everyone's all, you know, no challenge of this whatsoever. And then the same time this week, I can't play you the audio clip, but Hillary Clinton came out and actually said that climate change is affecting young women and children. And that essentially climate is a, some kind of a sexist monster. Hillary Clinton, women are the primary victims of climate change, and use Ukraine as the prime example. And here's Hillary Clinton's quote. Women and children are the primary victims of conflict and climate change, and there's no place that unfortunately shows this more dramatically than Ukraine today. So I don't know if she's trying to say Ukraine is a result of global warming, or is it a result of U.S. policy goading the Russians into invading them so that we had a reason? Because they didn't want to pull out of Afghanistan. 18 years, Donald Trump campaigned on pulling us out, couldn't get us out of Afghanistan. Suddenly, wow, Biden's pulling us out of Afghanistan. I mean, when I say Donald Trump couldn't, he would order things done and the military just basically refused or came up with every delay tactic. So Biden finally gets out. Everyone's like, hey, we're out of Afghanistan. Of course, he does it in the most insane way. Immediately pulls out, no planning, no protection, massive people left behind, death, destruction. The ISIS comes in, takes over. I mean, it was just like an insane scenario. However, we're finally out of Afghanistan. So a lot of people are happy, including myself. 6 months later, we're now not only in another major war, but in a huge scale commitment with much higher implications. And have an 80-year-old president, you know, tottering around about nuclear war now. This is what I believe happened there. So anyway, but I don't know why Hillary's saying that. So I went to, when I was in Egypt at the United Nations Climate Summit, I went to the Ukrainian UN pavilion and I interviewed the host there. I think I talked about it on the show at the time. Their spokesperson who literally said Putin fears more than anything, you know, Europe and the United States doubling down on solar and wind. And I was thinking Putin laughs his bleep off at us doing that. They actually believe that Putin is afraid of solar and wind power. And not, you know, of course, this is the reason all of Europe is now abandoning the Green New Deal and their record coal production, and countries are scrambling to do everything they can to get energy because, you know, they've been cut off from Russian energy and they had destroyed their own domestic. But anyway, I don't know what Hillary means by women and children are the primary victims of conflict and climate change. It's certainly true of conflict. They're the innocent victims many times, especially the children of conflict. But climate change, that's kind of like, that's been going on for a year. In fact, in 2005, I interviewed a climate activist at the Canadian UN Climate Summit. I think it was in Montreal, Canada. And my headline at the time was, "Men warm the globe, women feel the heat," group claims. The solution? Climate, gender, justice. This was 2005. This was almost 20 years ago. And at the time, I thought, what an oddity, how absurd. I had some fun with the interview. The lady, I actually interviewed her like 2 days after my interview, and she said, "Oh, I'm not doing any more interviews because this story I did in 2005 went viral because everyone thought climate, gender, justice." You know, it reminded everyone of an old Phil Donahue or Maury Povich or Ricky Lake or Jerry Springer show. "Men warm the globe, women feel the heat. Men who hate the planet and the women who love them." But anyway, that's how unique that was at the time. But this has been old and going on for a very, very long time. So we have that to Joe Biden. So this has been going on. Now we have the Biden administration on top of all that. The headline is, "Get ready to stink for climate change. Biden's new washing machine rules require new appliances to use considerably less water." Now, why are we doing this? Because it's going to stop global warming. It's all part of our fight against global warming. And in fact, the Biden administration's energy department actually says the proposed new efficiency standards would require to use considerably less water, quote, "all in an effort to confront the global climate crisis," unquote. So when you're having to wash clothes 2-3 times, and I know dishwashers now, you got to run them several times, it's all because we're fighting. Just have a smile on your face because you are fighting climate change. When the utility in collusion with your government shuts down your heating in the winter or your air conditioning in the summer and controls your thermostat with your smart meter, smile because you are confronting the global climate crisis. When your car makers can no longer produce gas-powered cars because the international finance won't allow it, and the corporate banks won't give out car loans, and automakers are banned from selling them, and you can't buy a new gas-powered car, and you're stuck with a 1950s Cuban style looking for used car market that's distorted by insane government policy, and or you're on a waiting list for the only approved car, the electric car. You'll be a la East Germany waiting for their crappy Trabants in the 1970s and 80s. At least you can keep comfort in the fact that it's all in an effort to confront the global climate crisis. You need to smile when this happens because this is how you confront the global climate crisis. You have to give up. You have to suffer. You have to sacrifice. You have to tithe. You have to take the pain. You have to wear the hair shirt. You have to inflict the self-pain on yourself, all to confront the global climate crisis. And don't worry, you don't have to actually make yourself do this. You're going to have your betters, your overseers, force you to do this to yourself. As they take away modern conveniences, as you're forced to eat. The other big news this week was on insect eating. More schools introducing insect eating in the classroom. One school in Utah, a teacher actually told the kids they had to write an essay about how insects were better for the planet and we need to end animal agriculture. And one of the students on tape, this is on tape, actually said to the teacher, "What if we don't agree with the premise?" And the teacher's response was, "Well, there's nothing to agree. This is essentially a fact. You can't disagree with that. Insects are healthier." So as you're forced to eat, as CNN says, cockroach milk is the milk you never knew you were missing, and the cricket-based snacks and all the insects, as you're forced to do it, just remember, let's repeat after me. It's all in an effort to confront the global climate crisis. As you eat bugs, as you forego meat, as you watch as they collapse high-yield agriculture in the Netherlands, in Australia, in Canada, coming to the United States, as we're forced to eat synthetic lab-grown meat in steel vats from Bill Gates' research because he's now the single largest farmland owner in America with considerable sway on agriculture and food policy. So you see where this is all headed. But don't worry, because I already said, It's all in an effort to confront the global climate crisis, according to Biden's Energy Department. So take the pain, take the suffering, take the privation, deprive yourself, and remember, it's all in an effort to confront the global climate crisis. I don't know if I've said that enough, but it needs to become a mantra, our chant. It needs to become part of your being, because this is our future if we allow it. If we allow it. And that's the key here. So it has been insane. And by the way, former Georgia governor candidate Stacey Abrams got a new job after her election loss. She joins an environmental group trying to eliminate gas stoves. And they're pushing that again as well. The gas stove ban, they're really trying hard. And it looks like, with the regulatory agencies, unless there's major and national, headline blowback, these kind of things tend to happen. They just squeeze the life out of these things. And within a couple of years, all the new appliances now are pretty crappy based on these energy standards, which suck out the energy and the fuel. But we're sacrificing all in an effort. Remember, all in an effort to confront the global climate crisis. You are standing up to do that. One other insane thing, which is amazing because it's actually a vote and not an edict, but the city of Berlin, I just mentioned the East German Trabant, which of course, the Berlin Wall fell in 1989 and ended the Trabant. But I think it may still exist as a novelty car. Maybe someone's doing kit cars for the Trabant for those nostalgic for the old Eastern Bloc communist days. But Berlin is facing a climate referendum that could grant officials, quote, immediate dictatorial powers. The Climate Protection Council could limit car and airline travel. So this is a vote of a city. And this would be the first, and it's amazing that they're allowing a vote on this. And I wouldn't be surprised if it passes. I don't know why not. People, in order to confront the global climate crisis, this is what you need to do. So I'll be keeping you up to date on that if that ends up passing and all that. So one other thing is I was on Newsmax TV this week, and I told them they were talking about Joe Biden approving this Willow project in Alaska, which is a huge oil drilling project. And the problem is he took one step forward and like four steps back, because he then banned all sorts of road building, land use, any other energy extraction in Alaska, in the Arctic, as a way to appease the environmentalists. He's desperately trying to get some energy. But then at least two lawsuits were slapped by Joe Biden's base against this. And they called it a, quote, carbon bomb for the atmosphere. And this would be, this would go against the efforts of, let's say it again, to confront the global climate crisis. It would go completely against it. So what Joe Biden, what I was saying on this show is, it's very simple. The climate activists, the base of the Democratic Party, Joe Biden, only want to see China, OPEC, the Middle East, Venezuela, Russia producing fossil fuels. The horror if America produces an ounce. You will never see Greta Thunberg protesting China. You will never see Greta Thunberg protesting Venezuela or OPEC. Why? Because it's only Western energy that gets them worked up. Western energy, which has the highest environmental standards, the highest human rights records compared to these other countries. But this is the way, this is the world in which we live in. So, I don't know if you have young people who are bought into all this, climate craziness. I don't know what to tell you. But the other last thing I'm going to mention is the death of a climate bank, the Silicon Valley Bank. 60 that collapsed and went under. 60% of it, community solar financing nationwide, issued billions of dollars in loans. And of course, the Biden administration appears to be bailing them out. And it's just another step toward this issue. And by the way, one last point. O'Leary from the Shark Tank show has been making the rounds on all these Fox News TV shows. Kevin O'Leary, I believe, is his name. Well, this is the guy who claims to be some kind of principled capitalist and businessman and everyone's looking up to. And the problem with this guy is very simple. He has been touting environment social governance on his website, partnerships with companies, partnerships with states, pushing this. He's all into diversity, inclusion, equity, and climate environmental goals. And this guy doesn't mention it when he goes on all these conservative TV networks and acts as though he's the conservative businessman. He's anything but. He's conning a lot of these shows. And they haven't, you know, I think Tucker Carlson came as close as I've seen anyone figure it out. On air, he was getting frustrated. Larry actually said on Tucker's show that the world will be fine with four major banks running every country in the world. In other words, completely controlled, probably headed to central bank digital currency, where if you disagree with the government, your bank card's cut off. You're not going to have any other options except your mattress is the way this is heading. But they're not even going to accept that what's inside your mattress, because a central bank digital currency is a cashless society. And as the Bank of England explained, it will only allow you to spend money on what they deemed sensible. Anyway, we'll be right back with Robert Zubin, the author of The Case for Nukes. I'm running a little bit over here. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
TNT Radio's Ross Cameron.
Australia has taken a decision in the military sphere which Australians may struggle to comprehend the significance of the step change that this decision involves. I thought I should go back just a few years to 2014. The Abbott government will select a Japanese-built Soroya-class submarine. So that's 2014. Then on April 26, 2016, French company DCNS will build Australia's $50 billion new Barracuda submarine fleet in Adelaide. So then we have round three of this extraordinary, magnificent step change in submarines, which came on the 16th of September 2021, when we learned that it was not the Japanese, not the French, but Australia is embarking on its most significant change of defence and strategic direction in decades. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said a new alliance had been formed with the UK and the US that was the most significant security development for Australia since the ANZUS Treaty. Interesting that ScoMo flipped on a dime from the commitment which we forced the French to comply with, that the submarines must not be nuclear powered.
Ross Cameron on TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Joining us is Robert Zubrin. I believe I'm saying his name right, or Zubrin. The Case for Nukes, the author of the brand new 2023 book, How We Can Beat Global Warming and Create a Free, Open, and Magnificent Future. And the book is available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Thanks for inviting me.
Now, I've been looking through your book, haven't had a chance to read the whole thing, but fascinating, and I've always never understood how they've been able to keep two things, how they were able to so successfully demonize nuclear energy, and secondly, how even with that demonization, repression, lack of support, funding, infrastructure, nuclear has been able to essentially reinvent itself with the same number of, or without a massive expansion, but being able to expand its energy through technological innovation. Nuclear energy has shown itself to be a survivor. So tell us a little bit about your background and then what led you to write this book.
Okay. Well, I have advanced degrees in both aerospace and nuclear engineering. I actually have a doctorate in nuclear engineering. Most of my career has been in aerospace. I worked as a senior engineer for Martin Marietta, Lockheed Martin, and then I started my own company, Pioneer Astronautics, which has been in business for about 25 years now, doing a lot of work for NASA, the military, and some private corporations. I've worked in nuclear, both fission and fusion. I've worked at a little bit at Los Alamos, got to know some of the people there, even a couple of the old hands from the Manhattan Project. The book includes some anecdotes that I got from people of that generation. I, of course, am not of that generation, but I know some people who were. And but also, you know, when I back, you know, in the 80s, I debate the Sierra Club, you know, and they'd be there campaigning against nuclear power. And, you know, and I said, you're against pollution, right? And they said, that's right. We hate pollution. We hate the smoke. We hate all that. And furthermore, we have to stop it because it's running out. I said, well, nuclear power has no smoke and it'll never run out. And they said, well, we hate that. And I couldn't figure this out until I finally realized why they hated nuclear power even more passionately than they hated fossil fuels. And it was because it would solve a problem they needed to have. Okay, because the deal here with the anti-fossil fuel campaign, it's actually an anti-economic growth campaign. And in the 60s, the Sierra Club was sort of divided on nuclear power because some of them saw, you know, it was a way to get around fossil fuels. But in the early 70s, they finally came out decisively against it. And in their statement of their board in 1974, when they made their decisive turn against nuclear power, they said, we must stop nuclear power because it would encourage unnecessary economic growth.
Wow. I've been to UN climate summits where they talk about planned recessions to fight global warming, to reduce emissions, the whole degrowth movement. So you're saying this whole idea of essentially not liking modern economic growth and prosperous society was one of the driving forces behind opposition to nuclear and, of course, fossil fuels.
Yes, that's right. But you see, the real target here is growth. And for instance, you take the German Green Party, the fanatics, right? But actually the rather substantial political party and influential. As a result of their policies, Germany has five times the per kilowatt carbon emissions as France, which is 75% nuclear in its electrical generation. Five times. These are the great green pixies. And the German Greens will go on and on about the sacredness of the forests. They're pushing biofuels in which they cut down hundreds of square kilometers of forest every year, killing millions of animals. I mean, you know, these are the nature lovers. They're the exact opposite. If you want to have minimum impact of nature, you want to use the most artificial fuels that have the least connection to the biosphere. This is why going from wood to fossil fuels was enormously beneficial to nature. It saved Europe's forests. And it's why going from fossil fuels to nuclear, which has even less of a relationship to the biosphere, animals do not use nuclear energy in any form, plants do not. This is how you minimize your impact on nature. To save the natural, you use the artificial. It was Rockefeller who saved the whales. Okay, the whales would have been driven to extinction because people were hunting them for whale oil for their lamps. And it was by going to petroleum that, well, the petroleum was much cheaper than whale oil and the whales got a break.
Wow. Well, if you look at the history of nuclear energy, like, to give us a sort of a snapshot timeline, when it came on, how the growth occurred, and then what in terms of timeline, what decade, when was the major pushback, and then how it dealt with that pushback and where we are today. Let's get give me a thumbnail of where we stand over the last, say, you know, the last century and this century with nuclear energy.
Okay, well, the fundamental science that led us towards nuclear energy was developed between 1895, when Marie Curie discovered radioactivity, through the late 30s, when actually Lisa Meitner discovered nuclear fission. But then it was made practical in the Manhattan Project in World War II in the early 1940s. And of course, it was used to develop the atomic bomb, which ended World War II without needing an invasion of Japan, probably saved at least 10 million yes. lives. And then what happened was, you know, after the war, the United States found itself with the necessity of being a global power, the Pax Americana, I mean, worldwide naval superiority. And it was realized that the aircraft carriers had become very vulnerable. And, well, basically, we needed nuclear submarines. And it was Rickover, Captain Rickover, eventually Admiral Rickover, who drove the development of nuclear submarines. So the Nautilus, which was the first nuclear submarine, is very interesting. It was developed in 3 years from program start to first voyage. Okay, 3 years to develop the first practical nuclear reactor, and a tremendous success on its first war games against the U.S. fleet. It sank the whole fleet. Nobody could stop it. It could stay underwater forever. It could go at high speeds underwater, vastly superior to a non-nuclear submarine, which could only go slowly underwater and had to surface every now and then to recharge its batteries. And we could sail these things under the North Pole. We could do anything. They sail around the world underwater. So there it was. There was just no stopping it. Now then, Eisenhower, still the 50s, he wanted to make a dramatic move. Well, this technology, it should not be limited to military applications. It could be a great technology for the human future. He declared the Atoms for Peace program. And so in order to make that a reality, he had Rickover and his team build the first civilian nuclear power plant, which was in Shippingport, Pennsylvania, once again, developed in 3 years. Nowadays, as a result of hyper-regulation, it takes 16 years in the United States to build a nuclear power plant. The construction time should have gone down as we became more expert in these systems. Right. Instead, it increased by a factor of five. Now, you should know, in South Korea and in China, a free world country and an unfree country, it still takes 4 years to build a nuclear power plant. There's no reason why it should take this long. But anyway, the nuclear power took off then in the 60s. We started building them really rapidly. And in the period of the Nixon administration, early 70s, we're getting orders for new nuclear power plants at a rate of two a month. But then it was brought to a grinding halt by the Carter administration, which changed everything, which introduced a regulatory structure that is incredibly hostile to nuclear power. It just made it impossible. And in the book, I've got a chapter on this, and I show both the statistics of how rapidly the time to build a plant went up and how rapidly the cost of building a plant. And in fact, the cost of building a nuclear plant goes up as the construction time squared, because not only do you have all the workers hanging around doing nothing as the workers being delayed and you still have to pay them, but now you got lawyers, and lawyers cost a lot more than plumbers. Yes. And And I show the flow chart that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has created. It's like a flow chart of a gigantic computer program of all the different steps you have to take. And each of those little boxes themselves involve a whole flow chart of steps. And they have the EPA gets in it. And the EPA, get ready for this one. The EPA will demand that a construction of a nuclear power plant that they justify why they didn't choose to build something else. And then even if they do that to the EPA satisfaction, interveners can come in and challenge the EPA's approval. So imagine you've got some land and you decide, I'm going to put a log cabin on this land. And you go to the city government and they ask you, well, why a log cabin? Why not a chalet or a candy store or a nuclear missile silo or a zoo? prove to us that those wouldn't have been better uses of your land. And somehow you managed to convince them that you made the right decision. But then your enemies can come in and challenge the decision. And now you're in court for several years, and then you win in court and they appeal. This goes on forever. So this is an insane system that was designed to make it impossible to build nuclear power plants. And it's a miracle that any have been built. And then they do other things. For instance, you take Mario Cuomo, not the recent one. His father was governor of New York back in the 70s. Okay, the Long Island Lighting Company built a massive nuclear power plant in Shoreham, Long Island. And they had it all done, cost $5 billion. And then he said, I'm not going to let you open it. Too dangerous. So after all the money's been spent, after it's been built, it's ready to go, he simply stops them from opening it, and it becomes a total financial loss. And then, so who's going to finance the nuclear power plants where you have that degree of political risk that any capricious politician can just wreck the project? Now, here you have the Biden administration. Okay. Now, the Biden administration, as you know, is allegedly concerned about global warming. And there's a certain faction in the Democratic Party, it must be said, that has now said, well, you know, how about nuclear power because we face the existential crisis of climate change. And so some of them say, okay, yeah, but not the current kind of nuclear plants. We need new kinds of nuclear plants. And
something that's what, many years in development far off in the future. Is that the gist of what you're getting at here? They're all for it as long as it's not available. Yeah.
Right. So the line is, yeah, nuclear power could be good. But, you know, these pressurized water reactors is the design that Rickover implemented on the Nautilus, and which in a couple of variations is the basis of like 90% of all nuclear power plants worldwide to this day. They say, well, the PWR is 1950s technology, pressurized water reactor, PWR. We need something better. Now, I'm not against research into things that are better, because actually there could be things that are better. There could be breeder reactors that get a much higher percent yield from the uranium fuel than a PWR can. But for Christ's sake, there's over 1,000 PWRs on land or sea since the 1950s, and not a single person, not one, has ever been killed or hurt from a radiological release from a PWR. There's no other industry that has a safety record that is that good. None.
All right. Well, we have to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about what I read years ago in Freakonomics, that if anyone's actually concerned about global warming, you should blame Hollywood and Jane Fonda for the film The China Syndrome. I want to ask you about the impact of that and, of course, the 3 Mile Island, and even like things like The Simpsons. And then I want to talk just more nuts and bolts about some of the arguments for nuclear waste storage. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We'll be right back.
Deweaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
It really is getting hard to believe the stuff that comes out today. I'm not going to even call it disinformation. I'll call it half information. The Washington Post, you know, it used to be a great paper. It really did. I mean, I had a friend that worked for the Washington Post back in the 80s, and we would talk about their editorial board and how they always try to present the other side. But once again, the Washington Post is at it. They say the reason your allergies are getting worse in the United States is because of climate change, because springs are coming earlier. That is total unmitigated nonsense. All right. The last 15 years, there's been no significant change in U.S. March and April temperatures. In addition, it's amazing. We had a warm February in the United States. Guess what? The 5-day period running up to the first day of spring, one of the coldest on records, especially in the deep south. They don't even bother looking. It's the same story over and over and over again. Well, guess what? Maybe there are other reasons why allergies are worse, like what you're eating, what you're drinking, your general health. No, it's got to be blamed on climate change. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is the Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we're back, the Mark Morano Show on TNT. We're talking with Robert Zubrin, the author of the new book, 2023, The Case for Nukes, How We Can Beat Global Warming and Create a Free, Open, Magnificent Future. All right, right before the break, Robert, I was talking about what happened in the 1970s, Three Mile Island, and then the China Syndrome film with Jack Lemmon, Jane Fonda, which I think was actually preceded what you mentioned about Governor Mario Cuomo. All of that PR, especially coming from Hollywood and the negativity. Tell us what happened with nuclear energy in the late 70s after Three Mile Island.
Well, you see, okay, look. The assault on nuclear power was launched by the Malthusian movement. Okay, you undoubtedly know that in 1972, a group of elites published a book called The Limits to Growth. It was called The Club of Rome. And they had this computer, one of the first group of authors that did, and it did the calculation, and computers, you know, are never wrong. And so no one could dispute them. And their calculation was that we would run out of everything by the year 2000. Okay, we'd run out of oil, we'd run out of copper, we'd run out of zinc, you name it, we would run out of it. Because here's the amount that we had, and this is the rate we're using it, and in fact, the rate is increasing, and therefore it's all going to run out by the year 2000. And only, you know, some idiot from the Chamber of Commerce who doesn't care about the human future would say we should keep having economic growth because you can't. Okay, so this is what they said. And this became the ideology of the Carter administration. The Carter administration issued a document called Global 2000, which was repeated by, many of the authors were members of the Club of Rome or the U.S. Committee for the Club of Rome, and many of the officials. And this is what they did. And so they launched the war on nuclear power because... nuclear power completely undermines this thesis because it's infinite energy. You can't make an argument you're going to run out of nuclear power. It's ridiculous. And do you realize that the average piece of granite, okay, that you see buildings made out of and mountains made out of, has 2 parts per million uranium in it? And since uranium has 10 million times the energy per unit mass as oil, it means a block of granite, okay, has 20 times the energy in it of equivalent mass of oil. So you see a mountain, you're seeing a mountain of energy. It's all around us. Okay, so they had to destroy this, and they launched this war. And the war against nuclear power began before Three Mile Island. Okay, now Three Mile Island is the only mega disaster in human history in which no one was hurt. Okay, really? Okay, it's incredible. Yes, there was an operator mistake at Three Mile Island where they did something stupid and cut off the emergency cooling during a shutdown, which they shouldn't have done. There was an automatic system that if they had just left it alone, there would have been no problem, but they panicked. And as a result, the cooling was cut off. Now, the reactor was shut down, but when you shut down a nuclear power, there's what's called decay heat. That is, the radionuclides that are in the fuel are still emitting heat, even though the fission reaction has shut down. And if you don't keep cooling it, they can melt the reactor down. Now, the environmentalists said, oh, my God, it's going to melt down. It will destroy the reactor. And then this radioactive bunch of molten mass will melt through the steel pressure vessel, which is 8 inches thick, and then through the containment building, which is 8 feet thick, and go down through the earth, hit the water table, and keep on going down all the way to China. And this was called the China Syndrome, which, of course, was the name of the Jane Fonda movie, of the very same name. Now, here's the thing about Three Mile Island. There was a meltdown. Yes. Okay, the day he did melt the reactor down, and it melted down and it hit the steel pressure vessel, and it melted its way about 1 inch into the 8-inch steel, and then it stopped. It never even breached the pressure vessel or even halfway through the pressure vessel, let alone the containment building, let alone China. Okay, so what Three Mile Island proved was that the meltdown was inconsequential, and the radioactive release. Okay, they vented a little bit of gas that caused an amount of radioiodine to be released from the plant, which inflicted the same dose on people in the local area as they would have gotten if they had taken a weekend ski trip to Colorado, where, you know, the background radiation here is a little higher because we're at a higher altitude. So
the workers were exposed to higher levels than that.
Nobody was exposed. Nobody was exposed. In other words, there were a total of 10 curies of radiation release, which is like nothing as an environmental release. And
so it was just pure fear mongering. In other words, unscientific fear mongering.
That's right. And do you know how the public was exposed to radiation as a result of Three Mile Island? Because they shut down. There were two plants at Three Mile Island, and one had the meltdown, the other was unaffected. They ordered it shut down, and as a result, there had to be more coal-fired power generated for the Northeast. And you know, coal releases radioactive thorium and uranium impurities from the coal. And in fact, much more than any nuclear power plant. Well, no nuclear plants don't emit any of this
stuff.
So it
releases those at the power plant, not necessarily during the mining. Is that what you're referring to? At the combustion of the power plant?
Yes, at the power plant. Goes up the stack.
Yes.
You burn coal, you release the impurities that are in the coal. There's no way around it.
Yes.
So in fact, the radioactive releases from coal-fired power plants are vastly, as in millions of times more than that which was released at Three Mile Island. And then, of course, depending upon whether or not you have a good scrubber, there can be other chemical releases. But by shutting down the unaffected Three Mile Island plant, they increased pollution, both of conventional pollutants and also radionuclides. Yeah.
Okay, we have about 3 minutes left, but just where are we with nuclear today? I believe it's like 19% of U.S. energy or electricity production.
Yeah, okay.
And so where do you see it going, and what's in small nuclear, and then what about the waste issue? Just give me sort of a thumbnail on that in the remaining minutes.
Okay, well, the waste issue is bullshit. When the Sierra Club announces campaign against nuclear power, they say we will prevent them from establishing a waste repository in order to wreck the industry. Okay, so yes, they've been campaigning to stop the establishment of a nuclear waste repository ever since. And the DOE had a plan to build one in under a mountain in Nevada, and they come up with all this stuff, okay, to stop it, so that instead the waste has to be stored at the plant, which is generally in the suburbs of metropolitan areas. So here's these people concerned with the public safety insisting that the waste be stored near cities instead of out in the middle of the desert. Meantime, the nuclear Navy has no difficulty storing its nuclear waste. They do it in the waste isolation pilot facility in Salt Caverns in New Mexico. This is a solved problem. They've just prevented us from implementing it in order to wreck the industry. Now, where's, you know, people say, oh, the nuclear energy is a dream of the past. Nonsense. You know who is? There's 450 active nuclear power plants in the world right now. China is going to build 450 more domestically between now and the year 2050, and probably an equal number all across Africa. There's a gigantic global nuclear market that we are ceding to our adversaries. Okay, even though we're the ones who invented nuclear power, this is all an American, it was an American ingenuity that opened up this energy source for humankind. And here we are abandoning it and letting this power of the future become the power of our enemies.
The final minute, are you optimistic? Are there signs that we're going to actually overcome this and America will finally go nuclear? I know we have people like James Lovelock, now deceased, big environmentalist supporter. James Hansen, the climate alarmist scientist from NASA, has endorsed it. What hope do we have here?
Well, there's some. In fact, Patrick Moore, the founder of Greenpeace, has endorsed it. But and there is a group in the Democratic Party called the Third Way, which is moderately pro-nuclear. I mean, look, the nuclear power, Democrats have a labor base, and the anti-nuclear movement, the anti-fossil fuel movement, for that matter, is effectively anti-labor or anti-jobs. Okay, and the so there's a balance there. You know, someone said, you know, if you look at how Hillary lost the election, she lost it in the industrial Midwest, and somebody said, for what benefits a candidate if she gains the donations of Tom Steyer but loses the votes of the industrial Midwest?
Yeah, exactly.
So there it is. Anyway, look, it's all in the book. It's called The Case for Nukes. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It publishes April 3rd. So if you buy it there in Kindle or paper, you can get it on April 3rd. If you want a copy now, you can order it straight from me by sending $29 to Zubrin@AOL.com on PayPal. That's if you're in America.
Z-U-B-R-I-N. All right. Well, thank you. Talking to Robert Zubrin, The Case for Nukes, brand new book. Get it. Thank you. Mark Morano, TNT Show. Thank you.